There was a list when Barcelona last thought about this. There was time, isn't there? I've just got a message from Tommy. I can't show you that. A nice little one, isn't it?
Subscribe now to the OTB Football Podcast stream wherever you get your podcasts and download the OTB Sports app.
You're welcome back. I'm sure the tension is palpable at this point. We can finally go to Alan Quinlan. Alan, how are you?
Morning, lads. How are you?
I mentioned there these Eddie Jones comments from last night. The Eddie Jones comments are interesting because they're in response to a piece in the London Times written by Owen Slot last week talking about how shall I put this? A relatively toxic culture, I think, that exists within English rugby, where there's been a high turnover of coaches, a hugely demanding culture, to put it mildly, that is instilled by Eddie Jones. He was on Rugby Tonight with Craig Doyle last night on BT and was quizzed about this. He got us back up quite a bit, I think it's fair to say, Alan, about this. Didn't really like the questions about being referred to as using old school methods. What's your take on this whole story? Is it kind of an indicator that maybe he is a little bit too old school for the modern era, or has this story done Eddie Jones a bit of an injustice?
I'm not sure. I think I wasn't surprised when I read the piece on Friday myself, and a lot of people are kind of remaining anonymous who Owen Slot was speaking to, which was, if you're going to come out and say stuff like that, back it up. I'm sure maybe there were some former players and former staff members who probably don't want to kind of damage their reputations, and they're paranoid about what they were saying. But there's obviously some truth to it, because there has been a big turnover in staff, and it's the same in my experience with any coach I've ever worked with. If the team is winning, these things are never an issue. There's nobody talking about staff turnover, because if you're winning, I think the comments would be that it's a masterstroke and that you've got to freshen things up and you're bringing in better people and they're bringing better quality to the whole project. But because England had a really poor Six Nations, and it's their joint worst Six Nations ever, finishing fifth, I think this stuff is probably surfacing a little bit. He certainly has a ruthless approach. I think one of the comments on the paper from somebody was, again, who remains anonymous, was that he's actually good company away from the rugby, but he's ruthless and unforgiving in the environment. I thought it was really interesting with John Mitchell trying to go and see his son play a cricket match on a day off during the summer test window, and he was getting ready to head out of the hotel, and Eddie Jones says, "Well, where are you going?" He said, "I'm going to see my son play cricket." "Well, it's a day off." And he said, "No, I've worked for you to do." And there was a bit of a standoff there. John Mitchell went and watched the cricket match, and ultimately he's gone now. I think he walked himself. I was surprised with that, because usually when you pick assistants, particularly the rugby coaches, they're the ones you have to have a good connection with, and you have to really gel with, and they're the ones who you would hope have your back. So you kind of give them a bit of leeway and flexibility, and I just thought that one was surprising. I can understand how it happens with physios and medics and sports psychologists and stuff like that, because usually they're the ones who internally get criticized if certain players are not getting back. You're trying to get better people all the time. And so I was a bit surprised with that one. But look, I'm absolutely sure he's pretty ruthless in his approach. And, you know, if they won a World Cup in 2019, he would have been an unbelievable hero for them. He's had a fair bit of success. But it's really interesting that this stuff has come out now, and particularly when he's left out some of the big name players that he's picked regularly, the Vunipolas and George Ford. But there's a balance between being ruthless on, in my opinion, and I had this chat with someone at the weekend, that if the environment is not enjoyable for the players and there is this tension and it's not a nice place to go. I think one of the players even said that, a former player said that they meet the Irish, English, and the Welsh lads, or the Irish, the Scots and the Welsh lads, and they'd hear stories about them having fun in camp, getting a day off, going back home at the week and in the middle of the week, stuff like that. And that stuff wasn't happening with England, but it'll be interesting to see how this, you know, because he's going in 2 years, I think, after the World Cup anyway, isn't he? But I wasn't surprised by it.
Yeah, it's a good point that you make, that it's between Eddie Jones and his coaches. Like, I mean, we've seen players all the time suffer a ruthless head coach across all different sports, and that's fair enough. That's kind of like a high performance setup, you'd suspect. And as you say, physios as well, there can sometimes be a tension there. But his actual coaches, the people he collaborates with essentially for the greater good of the squad, routinely leaving the camp. It must be just an unbelievably highly demanding environment to work in.
Yeah, and look, if you're winning, it's seen as a perfect environment because you're getting the results. And that's why it probably came up this time. And I remember in 2018, when Ireland went over to play the Grand Slam, I met a couple of former English players. And, you know, as you do, you say, well, how do you think the match will go today? Ireland were going for a Grand Slam in Twickenham. England are struggling at Six Nations. But, you know, obviously, with Ireland coming to their home venue and what was at stake, I expected England to be really, really find some form that day. And I spoke to a couple of former English players, and one in particular said to me, oh, I think Ireland will win this, Ireland will win the game. And I was surprised how, you know, convinced he was that England weren't going to be able to perform. And one of the reasons he said were, well, I was talking to one or two of the English guys this week, and Eddie has flogged them all week. They've done full contact sessions all week. The sessions have been really long. They're going to be worn out by the time the game comes. And I was kind of shocked by that, because I thought, you know, at that stage, one of the things you probably have to do, and this is, well, I'm no expert as a coach because I never did it, but I think if morale and players are struggling a little bit and results aren't going well, is to try and lift the mood. And one way of putting the mood down further is by flogging the players all week. So there's a balance. You have to kind of at times be really ruthless, and other times, I've always said this, the best coach I ever had at doing this stuff and the psychological stuff was Declan Kidney, having the ability to put his arm around people and, you know, other times kind of be hard on people. I think he was very good at that. He came from a background and of working with that stuff before and being able to do that himself. So he was very good at that. I've had coaches who've been unbelievable on the field and so much detail and so much knowledge of the game, and maybe their approach to players wasn't that good. So it's somewhere in the middle that you need to understand your players and try and listen to them as well. And I you know, it's a bit unfair in Eddie Jones that I prefer people to come out and kind of say it straight up and identify themselves, and then he could challenge the people who said that. But there's been a big turnover of coaches, doctors, medics, sports psychologists, and he obviously sees that as an issue at times when England lose. Like I said at the start, he's always been pretty polite to me. I've criticised him once or twice when I've met him, but he seems like a nice fella. But, you know, when he goes into that environment or internally, I think it wouldn't surprise me that he is very, very ruthless. Maybe he'd soften up a little bit in the next while now with his team and staff.
Is there any reason you haven't gone down the coaching route yet, actually?
Well, it just happened, Johnny. When I came out of the game, I wanted to take a little bit of break. My plan was to go to the States, and I had a coaching gig set up there in a college over there. I was going to kind of dip my toes and do it a bit more kind of semi-pro scenario, not going straight in, professionally into coaching setup. And then I got a call to go to the World Cup with ITV in 2011. Started writing for the Irish Times. Sky Sports asked me to do some matches. And between that kind of start of the season of September and the end of December, I had a load of requests to do games and do commentaries and games and do studio appearances. So I kind of changed tact a little bit and said I'll postpone the the little bit of coaching. It wasn't for money that I was going doing it. I was going to travel a little bit, maybe go to the UK, maybe go to France for a little bit for a year. And then suddenly the kind of, before I knew it, I was pretty busy calling matches and broadcasting and stuff like that. And that's it. I haven't gone back since.
Do you lose sight of what's going on in any aspect in terms of coaching? After 10 years, oh, actually, I'll give this a go now? Or are you, like, if Eddie Jones is considered a bit too old for it, like, do you get removed from the modern developments or whatever?
It's a really good question, because people often, we use this narrative at times that someone is out of the game too much, you know, or they're too far away from the game, that they're not hands-on. But what I would do over the years, I definitely speak to lots of coaches about their philosophies and what's changed. Because if you're doing commentary on matches, you have to kind of be up to speed a little bit about the tactics. And obviously you have a knowledge of the way you view the game yourself, but kind of being up to speed in different training techniques and approaches from coaches and the way the game has evolved is really important to kind of stay in touch with that. I have done all my coaching badges. I do some underage coaching. I've helped out with clubs over the years, which is good for me as well, as regards, you know, seeing the approach and actually doing a bit of hands-on coaching where you're kind of trying to get your thoughts across to amateur people. It hasn't been with any professional teams. So we always hear this in the Premier League where ex-soccer players criticise someone and then there's a lot of stuff on social media about them being too far removed from the game. But I don't always agree with that. I think you look at some of the older pundits in soccer, there's a great balance in Sky between Souness and Neville and these guys and Roy Keane. It's all about your own knowledge, but you have to keep up to speed a little bit. Would I ever go back coaching? I'd love to, in an ideal world, if you give me an opportunity to work with a team and do, you know, lineouts and stuff like that. Would I be a head coach and deal with all that pressure and criticism? It's relentless. And there's a lot of my ex-teammates or coaches, and I see the kind of roller coaster effect it can have on them. There's obviously great rewards in it as well, but it's tough when results are not going well and it's pressure all the time. So it's a tough job. And that's where Eddie Jones is. He's right at the top where people are having a pop off him when England, there's an expectation or pressure there for England to win every match. And if they don't, well then, you know, maybe the environment gets looked at, and that's what he's going to have to deal with now.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the weekend's rugby, Alan. I'm not sure was there any sort of expectation that the All Blacks wouldn't come up to the Northern Hemisphere on song, but that's certainly what's happened. Like, I mean, that Seve Rees try on Saturday, I mean, they're here to play, Alan, and is it a little bit terrifying as an Ireland supporter looking at what they did to Wales?
Yeah, it is. obviously, I think Wales are missing a lot of players, and I think it's difficult when you play against the All Blacks. They if you don't stop their flow and you don't match their physicality and really compete and kind of frustrate them and slow them down, they're relentless. And that's the way they've always been when they get on the front foot. And they were devastating at the weekend at times. I think they were fortunate with a couple of incidents and situations, the intercept tries. My son keeps asking me, who's the best rugby player in the world for the last number of years? I keep saying Beauden Barrett all the time. And he's just such a wonderful footballer. He's great anticipation of the way the game unfolds. And I think they were relentless and really ruthless in their approach. But Wales didn't help themselves at times. You know, when you give them a start like the intercept try right early on, it's just a bit of a hammer blow to Wales. But, you know, the pace and tempo that they play with is obviously very, very impressive. And you saw a spark from there at the weekend that would kind of frighten you. But without the ball as well, defensively, they're so aggressive off the line and they just don't give the opposition a sniff. So for Ireland in particular, who we're going to play them in on Saturday week, you've got to get in amongst them and be really physical and bring an aggression to your game that matches that, and then hold on to the ball for periods of time and be tactically good. So it's hard to get all those things right when you're being put under so much pressure. So they play Italy now, and then they play Ireland and France. So they'll be looking for a clean sweep, and they've a lot of young, new players introduced in the squad, a fair core of experienced players as well, of course, but these guys just bring that pace and that expectation that goes with wearing a New Zealand jersey with them, and they're going to be very difficult to stop. But who knows? We Ireland are, we don't know what to, we're not really sure what kind of performance we're going to get, because we've no way of measuring that. I think Japan on Saturday is going to be obviously an important game to get a little bit of cohesion, but certainly New Zealand are a serious proposition, and they look to have their mojo back.
Before we let you go, Alan, we just wanted to touch on Ireland's second row. As we said, we're going to get you on again just to preview Japan properly later in the week. But just one of these things we've been doing with you is going through the positions. We had Keith Wood on last week, for example, doing the front row. Just on the second row this morning, Alan, we wanted to gauge the temperature from your perspective. So who are the starters there for you, and who are the people breathing down their necks?
Well, look, James Ryan is obviously the first one that comes to mind. I think the three—it's two into three, isn't it? It's Henderson, Ian Henderson, James Ryan, and Ty Byrne. You're going to be coming up against Retallick and Whitelock, who are probably, when they're on song, the best second rows in the world, certainly right up there. So I think, we've Henderson and James Ryan performed so well against them in previous years, in 2019-18 when. Before the World Cup, when we beat them in Dublin, obviously we beat, the win in Chicago was a sensational win as well. So I think James Ryan, Ian Henderson, and either Ty Byrne, but I probably Henderson hasn't played much rugby. He was only back last week, but I think James Ryan and Ian Henderson are probably the starters for me at this stage. It seems unfair that you have someone like Ty Byrne who was, so good in South Africa and performed so well on the lines that he wouldn't start. But I just think Henderson, he brings that ball-carrying ability. I've said it a few times over the years, when he's physical and he's aggressive, he's so effective. So I'd probably start with them. And, when you look at the other second rows, you've got Alton Delan and Ryan Baird are the two backup second rows then. But I think Ryan and Henderson probably the starters for me.
Ryan and Henderson. And does that make Byrne a live option in the back row, or are you separating him entirely from that?
Yeah, it's tricky and it's a good situation. I'd love to have a big bruiser that you could throw in the second row. But, look, there's going to be a pace to that game against New Zealand that Ireland can cope with. So I think Henderson and James Ryan are great footballers as well. Ty Byrne is, of course, he's a live option and may start in the second row. The back row for me, Doris and Conan probably at this stage are two starters. So it's a case of who's going to play number seven, which would have a situation with Ty Byrne coming off the bench, which is not a bad situation for you.
For sure. So then between Delan and Baird, who would you have as the first man coming off the bench?
Bloody hell, on you want these bank details at the moment, are you on?
Well, if Ty Byrne was on the bench, I think then you're going for another back row.
Yeah.
Who goes on the bench, so you wouldn't be taking two second rows. Maybe you would. I think Ryan Baird and Ty Byrne can obviously play in the back row. I think you have to have Peter Mahoney somewhere in there with his experience over the years. If he doesn't start, he's going to be coming off the bench maybe with Byrne.
All the tough questions at 9 on a Monday morning.
I mean, Johnny, you were digging into his coaching history and his career trajectory. And you know what? I enjoyed every minute of it. So thanks for asking the tough questions, Johnny. Alan, thanks for being with us as ever on a Monday morning.
Cheers, lads. Thanks.
Alan Quinlan there, host of the Red 78 podcast, OTB Sports' new Munster-specific podcast as well.
Everyone is doing a podcast now. Like, you think, we started a League of Ireland one, and it was like, oh, this is great, there aren't many podcasts, and now there are about 50 or something. It's just the media of our time.
Just a reminder that the winner of our performance rankings will be announced on our social media channels a little bit later on, so thanks a million for all your suggestions on that.